I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. It is not easy keeping track of all the twists and turns, charges and countercharges of the Mueller investigation into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Last Friday, Michael Flynn, a member of the campaign and former national security advisor, pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI regarding his conversations with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. during the transition. President Trump's personal lawyer, John Dowd, said he wrote this tweet for the president's Twitter account on Saturday, quote, "I had to fire General Flynn because he lied to the vice president and the FBI." Now, this is the first time the FBI has been mentioned as a reason for firing Flynn, raising questions about what did Trump know and when did he know it and who really wrote this tweet. Now, back in February, the day after Flynn was out at the White House, Trump met with former FBI Director James Comey. And according to Comey, asked him to drop the investigation into Flynn. Trump says this never happened. A few months later, in May, the day after Trump fired James Comey, he met with Russian officials meeting with him in the Oval Office. And he said, "I faced great pressure because of Russia. That's been taken care of." And adding to the drama and the confusion, John Dowd claimed yesterday the president cannot be guilty of obstructing justice because he is the country's chief law enforcement officer. Phew. Well, here to walk us through this barrage of news is Ryan Goodman. He's the Ann and Joel Ehrenkranz Professor of Law at New York University of Law. He also served as special counsel to the general counsel at the Defense Department from 2015 to 2016, and he's founding co-editor-in-chief of Just Security. Ryan Goodman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me with you.
Also with us is Bob Dreyfus, and he's the nation's contributing editor, also an independent investigative journalist who specializes in politics and national security. Bob Dreyfus, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty. Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Ryan, let me begin with you and quoting from John Dowd saying yesterday that the president, quoting here, cannot obstruct justice because he is the chief law enforcement officer under the Constitution's Article 2 and has every right to express his view of any case. Is he on constitutional thin ice or not?
He's on very thin ice. The first article of impeachment against Richard Nixon was for obstruction of justice, and one of the predicate crimes that's laid out, or offenses laid out in that article of impeachment, is in fact interfering with a, and this might sound familiar, an FBI investigation and a special prosecutor investigation at that time into Watergate. So no president is above the law. And of course, the laws on bribery apply to the president. The laws on obstruction of justice apply just the same.
Well, let me go to you, Bob Dreyfus, because it's interesting timing having to do with this tweet that went out. And I'll quote it in its entirety. "I had to fire General Flynn because he lied to the vice president and the FBI. He has pled guilty to those lies. It's a shame because his actions during the transition were lawful. There is nothing to hide." What do you make of this tweet?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Bill Clinton was impeached for lying to the FBI, certainly not for the sexual activity he had in the White House, but the fact that he lied to a four-year-long investigation by a special prosecutor back then. I think that the issue with Flynn is that the special counsel now, Robert Mueller, is using a fairly mild charge, okay, he lied to the FBI, to flip Flynn, right? And what Trump is really worried about is not that he's sad, I don't think, over what happened to Flynn. It isn't like they were really good friends for years or anything like that. I think what he's worried about is what Flynn can now be free to talk to the FBI and the special counsel's office about what he may or may not know about political coordination, collusion, encouragement by the Trump campaign to vis-a-vis the Russians during their intervention in 2016.
Well, and picking up on that, Ryan, going back to you, it is interesting that Mueller didn't go after Flynn, his work with Turkey, his payment for the Russia Today event, or even talking about possibly kidnapping a dissident cleric who happens to live in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. It's interesting. I mean, those seem maybe compared to lying to the FBI. I don't know how that stacks up exactly.
Right. So that's exactly correct. On the other side of the ledger, Michael Flynn is legally exposed along all of those dimensions. You know, the one that's the most speculative might be the kidnapping one, but it's very clear that he failed to file as a foreign agent of Turkey and then did it retrospectively. That's a crime. In his statements that when he finally filed, there's misstatements and they're false statements. Those are crimes. They're actually mentioned in one of the Mueller documents from Friday. So there are multiple ways in which Michael Flynn could have been prosecuted and threatened with a very long sentence in jail, and he wasn't. So the thought is, the most reasonable inference, that he must have given up something of great value to Mueller in exchange for that leniency, and that great value is cooperating fully with the investigation, and it means that he must have some information that he already was able to show Mueller's team that would be worthwhile to them for that major kind of an exchange.
Could we also say protecting his son is part of that great value from Michael Flynn's perspective?
Absolutely. So Michael Flynn might have been willing to take the fall. People do that, but it's much more difficult for them to do it when it's a child. And NBC had reported that Mueller had sufficient evidence to also indict Flynn Jr. And the fact that we saw no indictment is an indication, once again, that there was something that was part of this deal. And that is a way in which that Mueller could easily proceed by agreeing not to indict his son, also in exchange for this full-blown cooperation.
Let me play something that actually Michael Flynn said at the Republican National Convention last year, obviously the summer of 2016, and he was speaking to an enthusiastic crowd.
Lock her up! Lock her up! You guys are good. Damn right. You're exactly right. There's nothing wrong with that. And you know why? And you know why? You know why we're saying that? We're saying that because if I, a guy who knows this business, if I did a tenth of what she did, I would be in jail today.
Well, let me turn to you, Bob Dreyfus. Have those words then come back to haunt him?
Well, quite literally, when he came out of the courtroom on, I guess it was Friday after the plea agreement was filed and he got up in court and said, yeah, I accept this. When he came out of the courtroom to his limousine that was waiting for him, there was somebody standing there in the crowd holding a big hand-lettered sign saying, lock him up. And I thought that was irony in spades right there. I mean, he knows that he did something wrong. As Ryan said, he has to have delivered something of use to the Trump to the Mueller campaign about what Trump and did and didn't do. I mean, don't forget, Mueller's job is not to investigate what the transition group may or may not have done vis-a-vis Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, as unfortunate or as illegal, or I don't know, as that may be. His job is really to look at collusion on the campaign in terms of its relationship to the Russians. And that's where the money is. And you know, so far we don't have concrete evidence or things we can point to that shows collusion, but there's a lot of smoke and a few small fires, and maybe what these guys who've now been nailed, can say will help Mueller put more pieces of that puzzle together.
Well, Ryan, let me go back to you. And as Bob said, we all know, looking into possible collusion, underscoring the word possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. But is Mueller also looking into whether there was obstruction of justice?
It does appear that he is looking clearly into that lane. And parts of the indications of this are the people that he's asking to interview. And so there's every indication that this is also about the firing of Comey and the asking of James Comey, when he was FBI director, to let go of the investigation into Flynn. So Flynn might even be able to provide information about that as well, like was there any communication between himself and the president about what the president had asked Comey to do. So I think that's a a very clear line that reaches directly toward the president himself. We'll never know if the collusion piece of it will reach directly towards Donald Trump, but the obstruction of justice one would have to imagine he's the centerpiece of that.
Is collusion?
Yeah, I mean, by
go ahead,
all
Ryan.
Accounts,
he asked
the heads of his intelligence agencies also to steer away or steer clear from this Russia investigation. So there's a lot of obstruction on the table. But there's also questions about Trump and Kushner and their real estate and banking and financial wheelings and dealings that could come into play. I would say that Kushner could, even if he's not guilty of anything to do with Russia, which we'll put aside for a second, there's a lot of question about his own real estate and money laundering possibilities. There's I just read that Deutsche Bank was issued a subpoena by Mueller. Deutsche Bank having intimate relations, not only looking east with a lot of Russia connections, but also having helped bail out Donald Trump's failing business ventures. And so they could, this is a red line, quote unquote, that Trump said Mueller should never cross. And I'll be really mad, Trump said, if he starts looking into my financial past.
Well, I'm holding the Reuters article in my hand as you speak there, Bob. And it says here, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has asked Deutsche Bank to share data on accounts held by U.S. President Donald Trump and his family. A person close to the matter said on Tuesday. So, Ryan, does this expand the investigation?
So I'm not necessarily sure that it does. There are very sound reasons for Bob Mueller to look into Donald Trump's finances with respect to the direct question of cooperation with the Russians. You would want to understand what would potentially be his motive. Was he leveraged out to Russian interests? Was he compromised in his financial dealings by Russian interests? And the like. So I think that's also the pass-through Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank is known for and has been fined for money laundering with Russian money. And it was the only bank that was willing to lend to Donald Trump. And he's leveraged out to them apparently by about $300 million. So all of that could still be closely tied. And there's a very sufficient nexus towards the specific question of the election interference and whether or not that Donald Trump and members of his campaign and associates worked with the Russians. I don't think, based on the news, that the president would be able to say, oh, Mueller has crossed a line. He's looking into all of my potential financial dealings or wrongdoings. There's no necessary indication that Mueller's taken it that far.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about the Mueller investigation, what it means for the Trump administration, for the president, where things stand today. Talking with Ryan Goodman, the voice you just heard. He's a professor of law at NYU. And also Bob Dreyfus. He's an investigative journalist and contributing editor for The Nation. You can join us, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain talking with Bob Dreyfus and Ryan Goodman about what we know, or I should say the latest from the Mueller investigation, and things keep changing moment by moment. Ryan, let me go back to you. Does Mueller have the authority to get President Trump's tax returns?
Yes, he does.
Is there any?
It's unequivocal.
It's unequivocal. I mean,
yeah, and he would be derelict in a certain sense if he did not acquire them.
And is collusion a crime?
Collusion is a kind of a lay term. You wouldn't really find the term in legal statutes, but there is a very close equivalent. And so the short answer would be yes, it's a crime under federal campaign finance laws. No campaign may take support knowingly from a foreign national, and that is criminally enforced.
Let me play another clip, and then, Bob, I'll get you back in on the conversation. This is President Trump speaking to reporters yesterday morning about General Flynn and Hillary Clinton.
Well, I feel badly for General Flynn. I feel very badly. He's led a very strong life, and I feel very badly, John. I will say this. Hillary Clinton lied many times to the FBI. Nothing happened to her. Flynn lied, and they destroyed his life. I think it's a shame. Hillary Clinton, on the 4th of July weekend, went to the FBI, not under oath. It was the most incredible thing anyone's ever seen. She lied many times. Nothing happened to her. Flynn lied, and it's like they ruined his life. It's very unfair. Thank you very much.
Bob, did Hillary Clinton lie to the FBI?
Well, I think both the FBI and former Director Comey have made clear that, in fact, no, she did not lie to the FBI. Whether she was fully cooperative or not, I don't know. But I think this is really just a attempt by the president to build political support among his base and to divert attention from the Russia investigation. I think more worrying is as Mueller begins to close in, and now he's inside the White House with Flynn, but he also, of course, has indicted Trump's campaign manager and deputy campaign manager, Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. I mean, as he begins to close in, I think we all have to be concerned about an erratic president and what he might do in terms of asking the Justice Department to fire Mueller, to close down the special counsel's office, to have Congress defund it, to pardon some of the individuals involved. I mean, these are all things that would cause political explosions and you know, counteractions by the legal system. But, I mean, really, I don't think we can put anything past President Trump, given his proclivity for outbursts and odd behavior. And so I think that's worrisome, and I think he's building the case for that by attacking the FBI, by saying that it's in tatters, by attacking the deep state, by saying that, you know, they let Clinton off. He's making a political case for lashing out.
Well, Ryan, can the president do all those things? Shut down the investigation, fire Mueller, all the things that Bob just mentioned.
It's hard for him to do it, and in part because it's really the prerogative of the Attorney General as to whether or not to fire Mueller. So Sessions is recused, so it's really the prerogative of the Deputy Attorney General. So it'd have to be almost like a midnight massacre in which Trump would have to force Rosenstein to fire Mueller. But there are scenarios for how that could play out, and then I think it's entirely correct that it could create a constitutional crisis for our country. For example, I think the next step would really be the talk of impeachment in a very significant way. For example, Senator Lindsey Graham said if Trump fires Mueller, it will be the beginning of the end. And I think that's what we'd be staring down. And I think that's why some of Trump's handlers, I think, are trying to get him away from that, because it is the case that I think he could act in an intemperate moment, especially when he and his family are being threatened by this investigation.
Is it confusing, too, Ryan, that there is the White House lawyer, that's Ty Cobb, and then there's President Trump's personal lawyer, John Dowd, and they seem to approach this case very differently?
They do, or at least they're approaching the case in terms of public relations very differently. So it's difficult to tell what their real strategy or game is. You know, just a few weeks ago, we were told that they were trying to get the president before Mueller's team to answer any questions that they might have and to just demonstrate their cooperation. But I now think if we look back at the, you know, Friday's guilty plea by Mike Flynn, that could have put the president in a lot of legal jeopardy, because if he had in fact gone before Mueller's team and made statements that were then contradicted by Flynn, he'd be in trouble. So they really are, I think, scrambling. And I think Dowd in particular has been most unhelpful to the president in the last 72 hours, making statements like he's above the law, no obstruction of justice could ever apply to him, and this tweet creating a major distraction and problem for the president, I think demonstrates that he's going to maybe have to clean house, the president, in terms of his legal representation.
Meaning getting rid of John Dowd?
Maybe so. I mean, he's done it once before in terms of shuffling people around in terms of his legal representation. But I can't imagine that one would be pleased with the way in which Dowd has come out into the public, making statements that echo in the same words as Richard Nixon. Who would want that?
Bob, you mentioned this tweet, and I'll just read the whole thing here. This is the president, after years of Comey with the phony and dishonest Clinton investigation and more, running the FBI. Its reputation is in tatters, worst in history, but fear not, we will bring it back to greatness. I'm old enough to remember the 60s and what the FBI did in terms of infiltrating peace groups and all of that. But how unusual is it for a president to speak this way about the FBI?
Well, I would guess it's pretty much unprecedented, and it's sad that more people haven't, you know, fired back from the official agencies, starting with, you know, Jeff Sessions, I guess. I know the head of the FBI, McCabe, made a statement which didn't mention Trump, which basically said we're all fine over here. But, you know, this is an unpredictable president, and I'd hate to be his lawyer. Stephen Colbert said last night that John Dowd is going to need a lawyer a lot better than John Dowd now. The president would be a terrible, terrible client. They've tried, all of his handlers and aides have tried to get him to stop tweeting. But, you know, he's maniacally focused on himself, and he has been. People who have written biographies of him say that, you know, he lashes out whenever he's criticized, so he's unpredictable, and there's no telling which direction he'd try to go in, regardless of what his attorneys are, no doubt begging and pleading with him to do.
That's Bob Dreyfus. He's investigative journalist, contributing editor for The Nation. Also with us, Ryan Goodman, professor of law at NYU. And we are talking about the latest in the Mueller investigation. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Ryan, let me go back to you. And this is this conversation that Comey says he had with the president about Flynn. Comey saying that the president asked him to let this go. I guess this would be the investigation into Flynn. The president says, I did not say that. Is this a pivotal conversation?
I think it is a pivotal conversation. We can all remember it as the conversation that took place on Valentine's Day, 2017. And it's pivotal because Comey is a very reliable, credible witness. He made his statement about what happened on Valentine's Day in testimony before Congress. And therefore, I think it's much more reliable that we could think that Comey's not going to risk perjuring himself. So when the president says he didn't say that, he's lying to the media potentially. That's not a crime. But if Comey were to be misleading us all through Congress, he would have just committed perjury. So, you know, I tend to believe Comey on that. A second item that I think is important is what Comey actually said in his prepared remarks to Congress about that eventful day in the Oval Office. He said that he went back and spoke to senior FBI leadership about it. So it's not just, you know, he said, it's actually that he then contemporaneously put it into notes and then spoke with senior leadership. And then the next big step is the senior leadership with Comey decided not to share with the investigators what Trump had said. And the reason Comey says he decided not to share it is because he thought it would chill the investigation. Mm. I think that is a bit of a bombshell. It's the former FBI director telling us that he thought that if they knew what Trump had said, that alone could chill the investigation. That really starts to add up a pretty strong case of obstruction.
Bob, what do you see as a pivotal either event or something that we need to understand?
You know, I guess there are a lot of things that happened, as you mentioned, at the top. People try to follow this, and it's a twisty and turny journey, and so many things have happened, and you have to be almost like, you know, Carrie Matheson covering your wall with right. with papers and charts and photographs and lines connecting everybody and so on. I mean, I think that the two events that I point to as a little more than smoke and not quite a fire would be, first of all, the Trump Tower meeting that was revealed as of this past summer, happened in June of 2016, where his son and his son-in-law and Paul Manafort met with a delegation of Russians who were allegedly came to bring dirt about Hillary Clinton. That's one sort of you know, fire that you can point to. And I think the second one would be the detail in the Papadopoulos announcement of a plea agreement, where Papadopoulos told the FBI that in April of 2016, he was told by the Russians that they had dirt, including thousands of emails on Hillary Clinton that they were offering to the campaign. And that's those two things are the beginnings of a pattern of concrete things that we can point to that show collusion.
Well, does it also show, and then we'll get to our callers, Ryan, a violation of this rather obscure act, but it's in the law, the Logan Act, and even what Flynn has said that he did do in terms of talking to the Russian ambassador to the United States, what can a incoming or even campaign do, and who can they talk to? They're not president yet, but they are either elected or they hope to be elected. What can they do in terms of conversations with foreign governments?
So the Logan Act is a 1799 statute that basically prohibits any private citizen from trying to undermine U.S. government policy with another country. And so it is a crime to violate that act. It is not a crime whatsoever or untoward for members of a campaign to meet with foreign diplomats, mm-hmm. And for members of a transition team to meet with foreign diplomats. In fact, it's so commonplace that, in fact, I've thought it's always very unusual that the Trump campaign would say we've never, ever met with anybody with the Russians or Russian diplomats or Russian ambassador. What they did do, it seems like, and what Flynn has now pled guilty to having done, is during the transition directly undermined U.S. foreign U.S. policy by trying to basically gut the effect of the Obama administration's sanctions on Russia for election interference. That's the Flynn phone call with the Russian ambassador.
Right.
And then the second set of events that Flynn pleads guilty to, says took place, is that Flynn, and we now know with Kushner, worked to gut a U.S. attempt to get a resolution through the U.N. Security Council having to deal with Israeli settlements, or allow for that resolution to take place. And they were unsuccessful in that attempt, but it was clearly such an attempt. I think any reasonable reading of the Logan Act would say that that's unlawful.
Mm-hmm. Because
now,
the
Logan Act, they were private citizens acting to undermine a U.S. policy or measure, which is the sanctions against Russia and the U.N. Security Council resolution, in negotiations with a foreign power. The act itself, though, has not really been criminally enforced. I happen to know of a couple like court-martial cases mid-20th century. Most people would tell you they haven't been enforced at all because they don't know about those court-martial cases. But it really is not something that the Justice Department has prosecuted. That said, the State Department has relied on the Logan Act time and again, has rescinded people's passports for violations of the Logan Act. So it's not like it's a dead-letter law. It really is a law that is telling people what they can or cannot do. We have one president at a time, and they need to wait until January 20th. So it's a fairly flagrant violation. I can't think of another example except for one with Richard Nixon when he was a couple days before the election that put him into the White House and negotiated with the Vietnamese. And LBJ thought that that was treason and wanted to release the information to the public, and decided not to do so because it would be a constitutional crisis if people found out about it.
Huh.
And so that's what we're looking at here. That is a clear violation, at the very least, of our core norms of how we're supposed to operate government. It's a legal violation that the State Department has enforced. Whether or not it would be criminally enforced, that's a more difficult question.
Well, that'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Let me get Maria from, looks like Wilmington, Delaware, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Maria. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a quick question for the professor. It seems to me that the by Dowd claiming that he wrote the tweet, has he now waived attorney-client privilege in any way?
That's a good question. Go ahead, Ryan.
Right. That's a good question. I don't know the exact answer to your question about that, whether he's given enough information that he would waive the entire piece of it. And there are many times in which a lawyer will say some things about their communications with their clients, but it doesn't open up the entire bag. But Dow didn't just say that about the tweet. He now seems to be speaking on the record to the Washington Post as of in the last 24 hours about what he knew and what he told the president in terms of how to construct the tweet and what he knew about the White House counsel, Don McGahn, informing the president that he believed that Flynn had lied to the FBI, so that Trump did indeed know it at the time that he fired Comey, or asked Comey to let Flynn go. So I think he is risking certain things, but I don't want to give you a definitive answer because I don't want to pretend to know that I have enough of information to go there.
Bob, anything you want to say before our short break related to that?
Well, you know, not really. I can't speak to that legal question, if that's what you mean. But I was going to mention earlier that I thought it was really striking that one of Trump's friends, the guy who runs Newsmax, said that it's now an existential crisis for the president with the Mueller investigation. And you have Steve Bannon and Breitbart calling for Trump to take this head on and to, you know, go at Mueller. So I think the people that Trump really listens to are at the barricades now, and that's a significant development.
And that's Bob Dreyfus. He's a Nation contributing editor and an independent investigative journalist. He specializes in politics and national security. Also with us, Ryan Goodman, professor of law at New York University School of Law, and he's founding co-editor-in-chief of Just Security. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me get Victoria from media to join our conversation. Victoria, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead, Victoria.
Oh, hi. My question is, maybe, I'm not sure, but do we not yet have enough evidence in the Russia investigation to actually say that there was definitely interference and that this invalidates the election, independent of whether or not Trump and Trump's team was collaborating in it? I'm just curious about that as a question all by itself.
Sure.
There are other countries that invalidate elections when there's been interference or it's clear that there's some nefarious stuff at work. So I'm just wondering what the status is for ours.
Well, let me toss that to you, Bob Dreyfus.
Well, I think, you know, at this point, if we accept what the intelligence community said last October and then last January, again, in their big report, certainly there was Russian interference, regardless of the collusion question. The Russians did what the CIA and the NSA and the FBI said they did. It was clear in that report, and it's been restated many times, that they did not make any judgment about whether this Russian intervention affected the results of the election, and that's an unknowable and unprovable proposition. So I think that the chance of invalidating the election is pretty much less than zero. It would be too impossible to prove that the Russian intervention, whether it was the hacking or the Facebook and Twitter and other actions and other things that they did, had an effect on the election itself. There's certainly no clear evidence that I've seen that they managed to hack into any of the election systems or change the vote count or do anything to those systems themselves that had a material impact on the election. So I think we take, and I certainly do, take at face value that it's been proven that the Russians did these things. Now, everybody can make their own conclusions whether it changed enough votes in enough states to flip the election in Trump's direction. That's, again, I think, an unknowable proposition.
Let me read a comment from Anne, sort of related to what you just said there, Bob. She writes, it could be argued that Clinton would have won the election had Comey not come out just days before the election and announced that he was reopening the investigation into her emails. I mean, we could debate this back and forth. I think Hillary Clinton feels this way. Ryan, anything you want to say to that? I have many more questions for you, and we've got some more comments as well.
Sure. I mean, I think it's a valid question to ask. I think that, and I agree with everything Bob said, I think that, you know, each of us may have to think about it ourselves. I think that there is, you know, Hillary Clinton is correct to point at that as a pivotal event with James Comey, and there's statistical analyses of voting and early voting that bear out the fact that it had a significant effect. Did it actually change the outcome? Difficult to say. Yeah. Obviously, Hillary Clinton lost by less than 100,000 votes in three states is one way one could put it. And it is true that the Russians invested a huge amount in social media, and hundreds of millions of Americans were directly confronted with Russian content, both to increase certain turnout and depress other turnout. Mr. Trump himself, you know, cited WikiLeaks. I forget the exact number, but it's over 100 times in the last 30 to 40 days of the campaign. He thought it was significant. But all of that said, I don't think this would ever really amount to a invalidation of the election and a reconsideration of that on a formal level. But I do think it's a valid issue for anybody to raise and think about how much this may have shifted the ways in which the American public decided to vote.
Bob, let me ask you something else. And again, we've been talking about the twists and turns of this investigation. And this is from yesterday. The federal prosecutors, I'm actually looking at the Washington Post here, asserted Monday that a longtime associate of Paul Manafort has been assessed to have ties to Russian intelligence. Basically, the prosecutor, Andrew Weissman, has urged the judge to reject the bail deal for Manafort, saying that Manafort and a Russian colleague have been secretly ghostwriting an English language editorial that appeared to defend Manafort's work advising a Russian friendly political party in Ukraine. I don't even know what to exactly ask you about this, but I mean, Manafort, does he not know that the feds are watching him?
You know, take one step back for a second, Marty. This crew of Trump folks was really a Star Wars bar collection of, as Steve Bannon once said, misfit toys. I mean, these are people who, many of them, and I exempt Manafort from this part of it, he were not familiar with campaigns. They didn't know how to run political operations. They were inexperienced. They were basically a bunch of, you know, Keystone cops in this campaign. And so if there was collusion with the Russians, you know, it probably happened in some kind of bumbling a misadventure rather than some, you know, grand council of Trumpets sitting down and planning how to deal with the Russians. But Manafort's action is, as somebody tweeted, either he's the dumbest person on the globe or he's a Russian agent or both.
Wow.
And there's no way to explain why he would sabotage himself in that way for something that had, I don't know what value he expected to get out of an op-ed that wasn't even printed under his name. It was supposed to be written by someone else. And by the way, they were referring to Mr. Klimnik, a Russian born in Ukraine, who's one of Manafort's, you know,
partners, maybe?
What's that?
Partners or former partner?
Yeah, he was somebody that worked with Manafort and this Russian billionaire named Oleg Deripaska and others in a decade or more's worth of Manafort's work over in Ukraine and Russia. So I don't know. I guess I'm hoping now, and I'd like to hear what Ryan thinks about this, is that Manafort, too, who's, you know, been indicted now, will also, in order to get maybe a lighter sentence or some, you know, something, will also start telling what he knows, because he's somebody who can really speak to this, I think, most directly, more probably even more than Flynn.
You agree with that, Ryan?
I do agree with that, and I think that, you know, Manafort is not separate from the collusion by any stretch. And when President Trump said on the day that Manafort was indicted, see, no collusion, no collusion, it was actually wrong in an important way. The Papadopoulos plea statement references senior campaign officials who said in their communications with Papadopoulos when he was communicating with the Russians that they would send a low-level person over to meet with Putin. Mm-hmm. That everybody then knew, the Washington Post reported, that that person was Paul Manafort, and the other person on the email was Gates. So Manafort and Gates were named, essentially, in the Papadopoulos police statement. He has a potential mountain of information. The Steele dossier, to whatever degree we give it credibility, I think there's a lot in it that is and has been validated, including an analysis by a former CIA senior official, John Cipher. The Steele dossier identifies Manafort as the bridge between the campaign and the Russians. CNN has reported that there were intercepts as well from the Russians talking about Manafort as being kind of their key. So I think that it's exactly correct. There's a lot of pressure being placed on Manafort to flip. And I think maybe even this bail issue is another demonstration from Mueller that he's willing to play hardball with Manafort. I do not think that Manafort indictment is the end of the story for him.
Bob, we've talked for about 50 minutes and we haven't talked about Jared Kushner yet. How should we, what do we know, what's the latest that we know about him?
You know, I love the Jared Kushner aspect of this. And there's so much to say because he, more than anybody else, I guess except for Don Jr., is part of the family. And those are the people that Donald Trump, I think, will ultimately go to the mat for and who will be also, for Mueller, the hardest nuts to crack because they're, again, it's like if you're going after a mafia family, these are the guys at the very inside of the nucleus of this operation. There's so many aspects of the Kushner thing. I mentioned earlier that Trump Tower meeting, but he was at the center of everything. And one of the things that I guess we could bring up in regard to him and both Flynn was they had this odd discussion with the Russian ambassador in the beginning of December of last year, I guess it was, where Kushner allegedly asked for a back channel that he could, through which he could secretly send messages to Moscow. Don't forget, this was during the transition. And supposedly these messages were for the Russian generals to talk to him about Syria. In Kushner's lengthy statement that he issued a few months ago, he kind of glosses over this and says, oh, it was nothing. But Flynn was in that meeting. And I find it bizarre beyond belief that somebody like Jared Kushner would want to have a direct channel to Russian generals. He's a guy who's he's a real estate wheeler dealer. He knows nothing about foreign policy. I don't know if that's something that he cooked up with Flynn. I think that's something that Flynn can talk about. It's one of the real mysteries of this whole thing to me. And so I think, you know, going back to what I said earlier about the red line, I think if they can't nail Kushner on this stuff directly, and maybe they can, he was involved in questionable, let's put it that way, real estate dealings that would involve Russian personas, including buying part of the New York Times building on 43rd Street. There's a lot to say about Kushner and his background where they could nail him and hopefully get him to turn as well, but I don't know.
Well, that raises questions. And my understanding, if my memory serves me correctly, is that he wanted to go through the Russian embassy. That was part of the workaround. But let me toss this back to you, Ryan. My understanding, he still has national security clearance. Are there security questions related to this then?
Absolutely. If he weren't the president's son-in-law, I can't imagine how the world would work in which that kind of an individual wouldn't have their security clearances suspended, and at the very least until they investigate further and then revoked. You know, he's lied multiple times he has made false statements multiple times in his security clearance forms, omitting the meeting that Bob just discussed with the Russian ambassador for some kind of secret back channel, which would have the effect of evading U.S. intelligence agencies. He omitted the June 9th meeting, which he was invited to by an email with the subject line, Russia, Clinton, private and confidential, and then he says in his statement to Congress that he was unaware of what the content of the meeting was about, and he didn't even report the meeting initially, and then he finally reported it in his statements. So he is exposed in many different ways, and the actions that he has taken would raise any eyebrows normally for somebody actually walking around the White House with a security clearance. So I think there's a lot of special treatment that's currently going on for him. At the same time, that's about politics. Mueller isn't about politics. So Mueller will follow the law. If Jared Kushner has committed crimes, then I think Mueller will snuff it out. And the Washington Post reporting over the last 72 hours had a number of witnesses who have appeared before Mueller saying the one person they kept coming back to and asking questions about was Jared Kushner. So my best prediction is that if there were going to be somebody next, you know, anybody would have predicted Manafort, anybody would have predicted Flynn. I think Jared Kushner might be the next one, and that goes all the way back to what Bob had said about the way that the president is currently acting and under siege, and the people that he listens to are saying they're at the gates. I think they're thinking about Kushner.
Let me read a couple of comments here. A tweet that says, we seem to be on the verge of a new national nightmare, but this one may make the Nixon nightmare seem like a picnic. I don't know if you agree with that, Bob, or not. I mean, we're not wherever this person thinks we might be going. We're not there yet. Also, an email from Janet. Does impeachment necessarily result in removal from office, saying that Clinton was impeached, but he was not removed from office? Bob, anything you want to say in response to those two comments?
Well, I guess I would say that what Trump is possibly guilty of is far, far more scary than Nixon's breaking into the Democratic National Committee office with a team of the plumbers, right? I mean, that was bad enough, but this is I don't know if it qualifies as treason, but it's pretty close. And so it's a much bigger story, and I think it's the most profound crisis that in my lifetime, and you know, I was born in 1948, so that goes back quite a ways. I think this is the most profound and scary moment for the country in so many ways, not just because of what Trump did, but how it could unfold. And what was the second question?
Well, you know what? I'm looking at the clock, and we're almost out of time. Let me just toss a quick question to you, Ryan. Are we ready to talk impeachment?
That's a difficult question. I think that let me answer it this way. If Trump fires Mueller, I think the impeachment talk will go through the roof. I think that is the constitutional crisis in which any self-respecting member of the Hill would need to think about impeachment. And not even just think about it, but, you know, Cass Sunstein, a leading expert on this, just has a book out from Harvard University Press, Impeachment, A Citizen's Guide. He actually says if it's an impeachable offense, it's an obligation on the part of members of Congress to vote for impeachment. It's not just their discretion. And I think that's where we would be at if the president decides to make that kind of a bold move against the rule of law in the country.
Well, that's where we have to be at as we end our conversation. Ryan Goodman, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Professor of Law at NYU University of Law. And he's also founding co-editor-in-chief of Just Security. Bob Dreyfus, thank you for joining us as well.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Contributing editor at The Nation, also an independent investigative journalist, and he specializes in politics and national security. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us.